Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAAR Football Show brought to you by AIB. Today we'll talk to Mickey Hart and we'll analyse the Ulster final. We're going to attempt to tell you how Westmeath can beat the Dubs. Going to be a difficult job. And we'll try to make you some money with our accumulator bets at the end of the show. With me in studio today, again, are Barry and Conan. Welcome, lads.
Cheers. Good to be here.
Lads, I want to start off talking about Jim McGuinness's piece in the Irish Times this week. And, you know, I think this fella, does he live in Cloud Cuckoo Land or in some sort of fantasy world? You know, when he said things like, the number one thing that I've the issue with, and I accept a lot of his points, that there are too many copycat managers. We spoke about that on the last show. And that they're copying the Donegal tactics without necessarily having those the players
at their
to
disposal,
use at
yeah.
disposal to be to use those tactics. But his explanation of where he came up with the Donegal tactics, fair enough. They're, you know, Donegal are a hand passing team, which they always were.
A running now, team,
yeah, a running team, and they were that when they won the All Ireland back in 1991. You know that it's just inherent in their tradition that they play a hand passing game. He says it's because they live by the sea, which is a fair a fair enough theory. You know, but like Sligo, and I suppose you could make that case for everyone.
There's a
know.
Lot of counties live by the sea in
a
Ireland.
A lot of Kerry live by the sea and they kick it. So I don't maybe down in Dingle they don't kick it too much. I don't know. But anyways, the one thing that caught my eye was he said he left three forwards up at all times. And that's why when he created this system, he knew he had Michael Murphy, big strong man, Colin McFadden, a big strong man, Paddy McBrearty. So they had the option to go along to those three fellas if teams tried to drop back on them. If they pushed up, then to go along, sorry, and if they dropped back, they'd run at them. Lads, he never left Michael Murphy up at full forward, or very, very rarely. Like, I mean, Michael Murphy was practically a half-back midfielder during Jim McGuinness's tenure.
Yeah, absolutely. I nearly would put Michael Murphy as, like, a second centre-back.
Yeah.
You know, if you took the number 14 off his back and you actually just watched him for the full 70 minutes, he did way more work out the pitch than he did close to goal. And, you know, in fairness to Michael, as captain and leader, he does play that selfless task, you know, of going back. But, in my opinion, he should be much closer to goal. I mean, we saw that in one of the Kerry league games earlier in the year. They put him in full forward for 5 minutes and he kicked 1-1 down in Tralee, I think it was. So, I know, obviously, when we played Dublin in 2011 in that sort of famous All-Ireland semi-final, they definitely didn't play three up front.
I know, but to be fair, he took that exception.
He qualified that one.
But, Conan, did you see them leaving three up that much?
I think, I don't want to defend them completely, but when they won their games, they did have the three up, like when they went and won the game. Might have only been for 10 minutes, but Michael Murphy always went onside.
They started a Mayo All-Ireland final and he got the goal.
But I would say 90% he was out around midfield.
But even 2014, I remember against Derry, when Derry had just got to the league final, expected to beat Donegal at home. It was supposed to be the end of Donegal, and Michael Murphy just went on after half time. 10 minutes, absolute destruction, and game over. And they don't need him in there then, so they bring him back out. I think maybe it's a bit of selective memory from Jim. Like, he did have them up there at some stages, and it was a sort of twin threat with him and McFadden.
You need to get a heat map on Michael for Sunday.
But Gallagher, to be fair to Gallagher, he's actually playing him in full forward a lot more than Jim did.
Yeah, that's true. Like Michael would have, you know, put in a lot of tackles, a lot of work, right, a lot of effort. Now, you could say, obviously, with teams with a number of players back, obviously, he'd be living off more scraps if he did go up front, and he's going to get a lot more ball around that middle third. But certainly I think the majority of his play is between probably number 6 and number 8 over the last number of years.
Quickly, he did come up with a suggestion, and I can't believe he's claiming this, because I came up with it a year and a half ago.
You've come up with a lot of stuff.
Is to leave back three detailed forwards and three detailed defenders, and they can't, I think he said one half of the field. My idea is that they'd stay inside the 45, that you've three designated defenders who don't move out, three designated forwards. And the beauty about that is it puts more shape on the game for starters. And secondly, you know, you might actually need to leave a fella outside the 45 metre line as a bridging player. So, you know, you can bring back 10 players, 11 players, but you can't bring back the 14. Conan's having a heart attack over here. He loves 14 men behind the ball.
I'm just going to ask why. Like, you know, I don't get what.
Because it stops teams like Roscommon and Galway, who can't play that system as fluently as Donegal. And it, you know, look, for example, Kildare and Westmeath. Yeah. You wouldn't have those two teams when they don't have the players to play that. They don't have the coaching ability to teach them how to actually break. And you don't have these horrible games.
But this is my biggest problem with McGuinness's article was that, you know, in a way I agreed. It's like, you know, fair enough. If you don't have the team for that system, then don't play it. But I didn't like the premise of it, where it was, you know, he was trying to justify why he did what he did and why he hand passed. It's like, you know, that's if a manager's trying to do that with a team who can't do it, that's just a stupid manager. Do you know what I mean? And he's going to end up not being there for a while, and then we're going to move on, and the game will move on.
A lot of them out there, though, Conan. Like,
there are, but I mean,
a lot of stupid managers out there.
But it's a worldwide thing. Like, it's in every sport. Like, the Euro 2016 was lambasted every single game. You know, it happens in boxing, it happens in rugby. Like, we're always crying about everything. Maybe just sport isn't for some people. I just don't like. I like the purity of being able to do what you want to do to win a game. You know, I just don't like messing with it and making the rules a bit too complicated.
So football matches are, you know, naturally they're sort of fluid games, you know, so you have players going up and down the pitch like that. But certainly I think a lot of teams are missing that link man, or sort of the half forward line, you know, where you have two guys there as an outlet who'll be available at all times for the ball, maybe just inside the opposition's half. And that's where the sort of disconnect is, because you could have three players up in the forward line, in the full forward line, but if you're starting from, you know, 25, 30 yards from your own goal, it's a long way up to get that ball up to them, you know.
That's the thing. And you look at other sports, for example, basketball has a shot clock, so you can't just be throwing around the ball in your own half. You actually have to go for it, and it improves the game aesthetically for supporters. You know, football, soccer,
offside rail.
Soccer got rid of the back pass rule because it was absolutely horrible to look at. Yeah. And now teams have just, there seems to be a huge reluctance in the GAA to actually change something. But if it was a change to put more structure, see more scores, and actually improve it as a spectacle, you can still drop two midfielders and three half forwards back. Mm. It's just you can't go so defensive that, you know, like Joe Brawley says, you know, supporters are turning around having a chat during the game because they know they're not really necessarily missing out on anything.
Yeah, I suppose on one hand, having good suggestions is one thing, but actually how likely they're going to be implemented is another one. I mean, you know, you could potentially trial a few of them in the preliminary competitions in January, whether it's the Auburn Cup or something like that, or maybe some, you know, underage tournaments. But until people actually trial it and see if it works, I think you just end up being talking about it for a while.
Yeah, what do you think on that, Conan?
I just don't think it's enough. Like, you know, it's all these still sort of spurious games that we're crying about. And I mean, we were talking about how much Mickey Hart's going to mention later on about how high scoring Ulster is now. You know, and that's when after a couple of years we started crying about this in 2011, and now all of a sudden there's too many scores in Ulster. Well, I think so anyway. I just don't think it's an epidemic in the game that we need to start just sort of tearing up the carpets for him.
Is it tearing up the carpets, or is it just putting a little bit more traditional shape on the game? It's not. I don't think that's revolutionary to say, right, you can't, like, say Derry against Dublin, they brought their 14 outfield players back inside the 45. Okay, that's the tactics they use to try and, you know,
nullify Dublin,
frustrate Dublin. But what we're saying is it's not really going to change a game in any way. It's just going to have your traditional full forward, full back lines holding their shape. So when you break, there's an option of a kick pass, or, you know, there's an option to actually move it on a bit faster rather than a lot of lateral hand passes. And just really just to give the game a little bit of an injection towards the attacking side, because I think at the moment it's been dominated by the defensive side.
Yeah, and like, but if you look at that Galway-Roscommon game, for instance, I mean, everyone complained about it, and rightly so. And if that keeps happening, then they will keep complaining about it. But you'd like to think that people in Galway and Roscommon will make sure that doesn't happen, because they could see there and then that it wasn't the best thing for them to do. You know,
a lot of it is down to the managers, though, as well. You know, how they employ the tactics. Like you mentioned about the Kildare-Westmeath game. Obviously, they had an eye on the final. You know, that's the way they were playing the semi-final, going that ultra-defensive. But
yeah, but is that stupid, you know, as well? Because that's waving a flag to Dublin, like, this is how we're going to play. Can that not be worked on in the background and say, look, let Dublin think you're going to go out and attack, at least kind of ambush them a slight bit, like Donegal might have done.
Well, the other thing is they're going to have another game after Dublin as well, you know, so, you know, setting up yourself just to play Dublin and keep them to 10 points is not really forward thinking or progressive, you know, because you're going to have another match if you lose the Leinster final to Dublin in the last 12, and all of a sudden you're after playing for the last maybe 7 or 8 weeks that ultra defensive game plan, and you're expected to, you know, go out and change your mindset, and that can be difficult for players.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult to know that. From my experience, we always only ever had one game plan. Like I was impressed with Pillar Caffrey that had two, you know, based on whether it's a dry day.
Yeah.
We never, no manager in Leash ever had an alternative game plan or a plan. Players always look for plan Bs. There's very rarely even a plan A in my experience, never mind have a plan B.
We actually had three with Pat.
Three?
Yeah.
Jeez.
In 2011, we did. And
you only used one.
Well, I don't know about that. If you look at our All-Ireland series that year, you know, against Tyrone, we played a lot of kick passing that night,
yeah,
and we kicked 22 points. And then against Donegal, it was a completely different match. Obviously, only kicked 8. And then the Kerry match, you know, when Kevin McManaman came on, we had a different game plan again in terms of running at teams. We worked on it. During the National League that year, you know, a game is about 70-75 minutes. We actually broke it down into 25-minute period, and we picked a tactic for each of the three.
Yeah, you're actually to blame for those Donegal tactics after hammering Tyrone with those kick passes.
Jim
McGuinness was studying that, and that's why we got
Saw Jim McGuinness from Rory Gallagher in the Croke Park Hotel actually after that match, and they were there with a pen and paper saying, okay, 15 man back here.
Yeah, just in a back room somewhere, just with one light in it, kind of plotting.
We used to have a coach at a club level would say this: if plan A doesn't work, make it bloody work.
Plan A doesn't work, drive it in.
Yeah,
that's the way it works. All right, great stuff, lads. Well, last Friday I drove up to Garvahi. Really long story here. I went to Dungannon by mistake. I was lucky enough to actually make the press conference, but I spoke to Mickey Hart afterwards, who was in great form. So have a listen.
All right, Mickey, an Ulster final. It's a nice place to be. What kind of a place is Tyrone senior football team in now at the moment?
Well, I mean, it's in a decent place at the moment. I think we made a lot of progress last year after what appeared to be a bad start, because we got relegated from Division 1 and then got knocked out in the first round of the Ulster Championship against Donegal. People thought that we were in decline and that we were a spent docket.
Yeah.
But I never felt that way, because I thought we performed very well in Division 1 and against the top teams, as it proved to be, Mayo, Dublin, Kerry and Cork at that time. We had good results, beat some of them, drew some of them on Mayo, but people didn't see it that way. But then we got a good run in the qualifiers and we grew in confidence as that. No one got to another Ireland semi-final and probably had a chance to win it. So I was very happy with that, even though you'd be disappointed they didn't get to the final. And then I think we carried on that form this year. Okay, people say we're in Division 2, and we were. But sometimes getting out of Division 2 isn't that easy.
Yeah.
And particularly when we had what, four Ulster teams in it as well, which made it quite a lot of derby games.
Yeah.
So we were pleased to get out of that and to progress. We won the McKenna Cup, as we generally try to do. So that gave us that winning feeling again. And right through to where now in the Ulster final, haven't been there for 6 years. So that's definitely something that Tyrone people are beginning to get excited about again.
Yeah, and it's a completely new team now, Mickey. There's been talk of transition for the last few years. You know, the Gormleys and all, and McManamans have all kind of filtered out one by one.
Yeah.
And outside of Sean Kavanagh, you know, it's a brand new team.
Yeah.
The talk of transition is over, and now you want to start winning.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it. That is true. But, you know, you certainly can't say there wasn't a lot of transition that took place.
Yeah.
And it had to take place. And I think the fact
was it difficult to let the older lads go?
It's always difficult to let people go that have been there and done it with you. But I think most of them recognise when their time comes, and they're prepared to stay a while to be a part-time player where they used to be a full-time player. And then I think they recognise that it's time to let younger people in and let them have the experience. So I've never found it, you know, it's always been an amicable sort of release, if you like, of the players. And that's the way I'd want it to be. I wouldn't want to be cutting any of those players and saying, determining you're not with it anymore. I think they do recognise themselves that they haven't got what they used to have in terms of the modern day game, and that age does catch up with everyone. So, you know, I'd still be in good terms with all of those players.
Yeah, and especially the way you play, it's such a speedy, fast breaking game that, you know, you need to be young and you need youth in your legs.
Well, you do need that. And it's not all about the people inside were asking me there too about, you know, is pace the main thing in the game now?
Vital on the break, though, isn't it?
It is, of course, very important. But you couldn't have a team of athletes who can run really fast and not play much ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, you need a mix of everything.
Yeah.
You need quality players, you need players with vision, you need players that can control the ball at pace. So it's no good in having pace and not being competent in the skills.
Yeah.
So it isn't to say that because it's a pacey game now, that skill has gone out of it.
Ah, yeah.
It's not. It's actually maybe more skillful, because you have to be skillful and pacey.
Yeah.
Which in the past if you were skillful alone, it would have done you.
But it's harder to find players then because there's an extra box to have, you know what I mean, to have to take that pace.
Yeah, but they don't all have to have that electric
pace.
Yeah,
the full forward line doesn't.
You have to have people who have that pace and you got to position them in the right places where that pace can be put to use. But there's other places where clever players, positional players, players with vision will also have a part to play in this game. Players who can field the high ball without a mark.
Yeah,
that will still be good.
How difficult is this system to coach? You know, strategically bringing fellas back into your own half, you know, putting them in certain places, break, who breaks, which fellas break, you know, has it been difficult to get, you know, perfected?
No, it's not difficult. And I suppose you never perfect it. You actually work on it and you see what works for you and you see as you play a game with that, what flaws come up in it and what did you not anticipate having to deal with and how would you deal with that if it come up again? So it's a work in progress all the while, but you need to get the players to buy into the concept that you need to be quality in defence and you need the collective defence in the modern game rather than the one-to-one sort of toe-to-toe stuff, because in the modern game, with the quality of passing that players can do nowadays and the speed of forwards, if you're left one-on-one and the way refereeing is that a pull or a pull down is a black card or a yellow card, then you cannot really afford to be as open and as exposed as that. So the game demands that there's a collective ethos. And I think that's good, you know, because it's a team game. And, you know, I tell people often, I played in the 60s, late 60s, well, underage football played in the 70s, and it was a lazy game for forwards because you would let the backs do all the dog work and get the ball back and kick it up to you, and all you had to do was beat your own man and score. And that was an easy life, really, because they did the work and they did the chasing and they did the tackling and the blocking, and all you do is finish scores.
You notice in backs and forwards, when I was playing, the backs always won because they worked harder, but that's not the case anymore now.
No, it's not the case. You need the working mentality of every player and that he's prepared to do things outside his own comfort zone. So whatever skills he has coming there, if he thinks he's a forward all his life and he does what forwards used to do, then he has to learn that he's got to do more than that.
Why is the Ulster Championship so exciting and high-scoring this year, Mickey? Give me some analysis of the change.
Well, I suppose people were alarmed a wee bit about the early rounds because there was too many games won by a wide margin. And that was a stark contrast to what went before. People said these Ulster Championships are dour, dogged-out things and not worth looking at. So they weren't worth looking at when they were dogged, and then they weren't worth looking at because some team was winning by 8 or 10 points. But anyway,
the semi-finals were great.
Came along and it changed all that again because we had very competitive games, but there were scoring games as well.
Yeah. So why were the why are they so high scoring? Is it because my theory is because teams are pushing up and kick out, so it's 15-on-15 for the kick out. For that chance, so you have a chance if you attack really quickly to maybe get a few scores.
Yeah, there's an element of truth in that. That you know you can't sort of be ultra offensive as you want to be and not expect to be exposed a bit in the back.
Yeah.
And again, I suppose if
that's a nice balance, though, isn't it?
It is. It's nice to get that balance. But you know, we wouldn't like to concede 2-17 every day we go out anyway, no matter how much we score.
The game was over towards the end.
But that's the case, you know. So, but being able to score and score highly means you're giving yourself a real good chance of being ahead at the end of the game.
Yeah. What do you think of Donegal? Is it fair to say Rory Gallagher has his stamp on it now? I don't know if you were at the Monaghan game, but they were very, very attacking.
Oh, was that the first game, wasn't it, the second game?
Yeah, they commit a lot of bodies forward now, whereas those games were cagey affairs.
Yeah.
Donegal just completely took the game to Monaghan, scored 10 points in the first half alone.
No, I think that it's an evolution, as I said, of the game, that, you know, Donegal started out in 2011 with absolute ultra defence.
Yeah.
And then in 2012, they knew they had to move on a bit from that to be able to win important games. They did that. And now they've got all that experience to call on, so they can actually get a blend that suits Rory Gallagher, who was part of those things as well. And now he's going to, as you say, put his own stamp on it, where he'll tweak and change a little bit of the strategy of how they go forward and who goes forward and how they can punch holes in a defence. So, yeah, I can see that there's a difference, albeit a sameness about them. There's a slight difference as well.
Yeah. It's maybe more focused on attack, but maybe, like you said, that's the way the game's going. Yeah. And their kickouts are going to be very interesting because they're going long a lot.
Yeah.
And I know from your teams that I played against, that's your bread and butter. You'll get a break on that. You'll have bodies diving on the break. You know, that would suit you if they want to go long to midfield.
Well, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. I'll not pass judgment on that until after the game happens.
Yeah, but you're an expert at spoiling kickouts. You've done it to Darragh O'Shea. You've done it to better midfielders than Donegal have.
Well, look, we'll play that when we come to it. Yeah, it's a matter of fact that Paul Durkin was a wonderful goalkeeper and was a key element of Donegal's attack and play, if you like, because a lot of the attack started with his kick out, and this young man hasn't the experience of that just yet, so he has to deal with the best of his abilities and play to the best of his abilities, and that may be different than what Paul Durkin would have done. So I'm sure Donegal are well aware that they will be doing things that will facilitate the type of kick out that he'll take.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk, Mickey, that I suppose I don't want to look too ahead, but with your system, you're probably the team with your youth and your legs that you're the one team that could potentially beat Dublin. You know, what
foolish talk, and we have no control over that.
Yeah.
We're far away from Dublin, and I've said this right through the year, that, you know, we're probably as far away from Dublin in our performances as we are geographically from them. You know, we're 100 miles away, so we don't even think like that at all, and it'd be foolish to think like that, and we have to take it a step at a time. We need to win Ulster if we can, because that'll be very good, get you into the last eight. And then
get to a good draw too.
Then you're into the knockout stages of the All Ireland series, which we love being in. We love playing in Croke Park. We want to be there. We want to be there as much as possible. If we can get ourselves to a place where we're before Dublin or Kerry or anybody else, then we'll be very happy. Nothing to do with who the opposition is, but because we'd be on the other side of a final.
Yeah,
we'd love to be there.
Mickey, thanks very much. Best of luck.
No problem.
Lads, I have to tell you, when I asked Mickey Hart that question about the Donegal kickouts, because Donegal are going long to midfield now. We talked about that before. But, you know, this is Tyrone's bread and butter. Donegal kind of have to go long to midfield because, you know, because McGinley obviously doesn't have the same repertoire of short kickouts as Durkin had. So, like, I said to Mickey Hart, this is your bread and butter. You love spoiling a good midfield. Like, I mean, we used to have Noel Garvin, Clancy, who were good fetchers.
Yeah.
Tyrone would be breaking that ball, diving on the breaks. They took Darragh O'Shea out of the game. Like, Donegal going long to midfield is really, really going to play into Tyrone's hands.
And sometimes Tyrone actually allow you to make the catch, knowing that, you know, as soon as he hits the ground, he's going to be completely outnumbered. You know, we saw that back with Darragh O'Shea and even Darragh Kinnaird, I think, in the 2003 All-Ireland semi-final. But it is their bread and butter. You know, they're well able for it. Them having two big midfielders isn't a sort of tactics from Mickey Hart. But yeah, I think Paul Durkin is a bit of a loss. You know, he had such a range of kickouts, and, you know, he was very good at it over the last few years, sort of slicing these kicks out towards the sideline and disguising them as well. Very cute. And obviously all the Donegal halfbacks and midfielders would have been on his wavelength. So it is a bit of an adjustment for them not having him here this year. Obviously, you know, they knew he wasn't going to have him earlier in the year, so they had a bit of time to plan for it. But certainly, you know, you can expect a lot of bodies around that midfield from Tyrone.
I mean, I think it sort of depends on Neil Gallagher as well. I mean, like, Donegal might not care about going long. I mean, like, we saw Durkin giving Murphy so many balls on the half-forward line from the kick-out. Neil Gallagher's there, Rory Kavanagh's there, but then they also have these men we were talking last week about pointing the ball down and going after it. I mean, if there's any players capable of going after a break ball, it's five or six of those little half backs and half forwards that Donegal have, I think. I think it's not going to be that big of a disaster, and I do think Mickey Hart will still have a problem on his hands trying to sort of figure out how they're going to stop it.
It's actually, yeah, interesting enough, Mickey Hart saying, you know, that pushing up on kickouts has been responsible for the high scoring, which it probably has. But if they're pushed up on kickouts, if Donegal go long, they might not have all those bodies in around to swarm the midfielders if they catch them. So there's a huge dynamic being added to Gaelic football in Ulster. Now the teams are trying to push up and be a bit more attacking.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, in the 2014 All-Ireland semi-finals between Dublin and Donegal, Donegal actually got a couple of goals in the first half from long kicks, and it was a flick on by Michael Murphy or Neil Gallagher, and all of a sudden you had this huge gap between, you know, Roy O'Carroll in the full back line, and all the half backs were sucked into midfield. You had a 50 yard gap, and Ryan McHugh came through and got a couple of goals. So, you know, that's just another area that Mickey Hart will have to be wary of. But, like, you know, he's such a shrewd man, he'll have, you know, pretty much everything covered by the time Sunday comes.
Yeah, they've some amount of pace in the team, Conan, don't they? That's like, I mean, they're the ultimate counter-attacking team, Tyrone,
yeah. And I actually think they're probably their only weak link, but might be their full forward line, where if it comes down to it, is it going to be good enough to win a big game for them? But what you're saying there about the pace, that's what makes their system so good. Those lads are just whippets up front, play the ball out, they win it for them, and then they've got five, six, seven lads coming off their shoulder. It's so
hard
to handle.
McCann, McShane, these lads just break so fast. And Donnelly in midfield.
Exactly. Well, that's the beauty of, I suppose, Colm Kavanagh's role, because he sits back, he then gives a licence for all these players to go. So, you know, as soon as Tyrone win the ball back, all of these players can run 50, 60, 70 yards, knowing that their man is probably covered back there. And, you know, Matty Dolly is obviously a key player. He plays around the middle. You know, sometimes he lines out midfield. But, you know, I think for opposition managers, you got to put a defender on him. You know, you can't have a midfielder marking Matty Donnelly. It makes absolutely no sense because, yeah, the midfielder might get on 15, 20 possessions, but Matty Donnelly's having a field day kicking 4 points from play. So, but see, Tiernan McCann and Peter Hart in particular, they've just serious pace. And, you know, they go straight for the goal as well. You know,
straight
they
down the middle.
Straight down the middle, you know, because they have that power to burst through. Couple of 1-2s and you're straight in for a goal. You know, we saw it in the All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry last year, where they created those four or five goal chances, didn't take them, which ultimately cost them. But you know, against Cavan, obviously they got five goals the last day. So yeah, they'll be looking to get a couple of more goals this Sunday.
It's always interesting when I see a player who's comfortable in the forwards playing in midfield. Like, you look at Sean Kavanagh, the impact he made. Mm. Like, he was a forward at minor level. Going forward, midfielders hate marking each other. There's an ego with midfielders. They're there to fetch, you know, and if they do the fetching, that's their job done. But they don't want to track.
No.
I love a big man, small man combination in midfield. I don't think every county should have one, because if you have Donnelly, you know, on Rory Kavanagh wouldn't be too bad, if you're a mobile midfielder. But like on Gallagher, for example, which, you know, Donegal wouldn't allow happen. But midfielders don't want to track those type of players. And you just can run amok going forward on one of these big fetching midfielders.
It'll be interesting to see, though, like, yes, Tyrone love the counter-attack, Donegal love the counter-attack, but both of them are experts at this. They're not going to play in each other's hands, and they might be prepared for the midfielders not tracking each other. They'll be back in position instead of having to track. It's going to, like, you know, if you look at the Derry performance at the start of the year against Tyrone, the first goal they got was just everybody from Derry piling forward for no reason. The fullback, Brendan Rodgers, loses it on the Tyrone 45. Bang, 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 there's four or five of them ahead of Derry shirts, and it's a goal. That probably won't pan out this weekend. Like, you can't, you'd imagine that there's going to be two sets of players just sort of sitting back, waiting for it.
On the evidence of the Monaghan game, Conan, like, Donegal did not do that. Monaghan did it. It was the most attacking I've ever seen Donegal play. Like, okay, obviously since Jim took over, they didn't. At times I was looking back the field and they had no full time sweeper left back there. They'd all pushed up into the middle third and they were taking turns of, you know, making runs forward and coming off the shoulder. If the ball broke down, then you'd see one of them, you'd see Eamon McGee, you'd see Frank McLean or Lacey would drop back. But they weren't wasting themselves standing there when they had the ball. They were actually up in an area that maybe Monaghan might actually have to, you know, engaging a Monaghan player. So it will be interesting to see whether Donegal continue that. I think because Monaghan are such a defensive team similar to Tyrone, I don't really see what, if it worked against Monaghan to score 10 points in the first half, why they won't actually do that. Now, they will be leaving themselves open potentially to a counter-attack, but they're kind of really offensive, but they're clever enough that they're watching the house as well.
Did they lose the ball much that day against Monaghan?
No, a lot of their because, and this is like a double win situation, because they had so many bodies in the middle third, their moves didn't break down. The move often breaks down if you only send two or three up there, because they'd be swarmed. But they had so many bodies and they're so slick with their hand passing that the move never often broke down, so they didn't have to worry about getting caught in the breaks. So I think actually
A lot of their moves, because they had, you know, bodies around in sort of clusters, so you had three or four guys going in a pack and, you know, a couple of slick hand passes, 1-2s, just completely takes out maybe 30-40 yards of Monaghan players. And, you know, that probably, there was an element of surprise in that, so maybe that's gone from you know, if Mickey Hart has been analysing those couple of games. But like, traditionally obviously Donegal would have played a number of players back, and to be honest, I would have liked to have been in that system, because you just have the license to go forward, and then when you run back, someone else is marking your man, so you get that 10-20 seconds breather, which is, you know, what you want at that particular time. But just going back to the midfielder's point as well, like, yeah, certainly, you know, my time playing midfield for Dublin in the league a number of times, and we played against Cork and Kerry and Aidan Walsh and David Moran, the only time I came into contact with them was for the kick out. Every other time during open play, we never really, you know, we never had a one-on-one.
Isn't that mad?
You know, I never tackled him. He never tackled me. It was like we had a pre-arranged agreement, you know.
Just do your own thing.
Just do your own thing, yeah. And I'd end up probably tackling the halfbacks or someone else more so than actually my own man, you know.
Yeah, so that's there's definitely a value in having someone who's kind of sneaking up into forward positions, because midfielders tend to stay traditional style midfielders. Matty Donnelly's an exception, that he's not a traditional style, that they stay between in the middle third. They don't really venture too far back or too far forward. Maybe for 45s they'll be down back, you know, catching. But the value of having someone who's constantly, like Enda Smith, for example, with Roscommon, played in midfield against Kerry in the league. I was analysing that game. He scored 3 points from play. Had the run of the park. Like, he's a natural forward, but he's fast and he's big. He got cleaned out on kickouts. So, like, I mean, you know, he wasn't able to even contest the kickouts, but he scored 3 points from play, got man of the match. But, like, on looking at it aesthetically, he was sensational, but he didn't really do his bread and butter work.
Yeah, Graham Riley actually has played midfield for Meath a few times like that.
Oh, he'd still be the ultimate going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, because I mark Graham as well, and he is, like, an absolute snake of a half forward because he's no interest in tracking you.
No.
And you make a run, and the tax breaks down, and he's about 80 yards away from you looking for that ball, and he ends up clipping, you know, 5 points from play.
Yeah, it's a game of it's a game of cat and mouse with the halfback, half forward. You let the halfback on, and I've done it, because if you track him, you're gone.
If
you take that chance that he's gone, it breaks down, you get your point.
Yeah.
He's marking you then. You don't have to be following this fella. But Graham Riley is a great word. He is the ultimate snake. He's just waiting for breaks. He's waiting around the half forward line. But, like, he's not... For a half forward, he clocks up some amount of, you know, points.
He'd be one of the top scorers.
There's a value in having one half forward that does that. That holds the half forward line and is looking for, like, it's like a poacher.
Yeah, and then unfortunately the other two half forwards have to do the work of three then he's holding up the pitch, you know. But yeah, there is a value to it, because, you know, wing forwards don't score a huge amount nowadays, but if you play that sort of role, you can pick up 4 or 5 points and play handy enough.
Yeah, Conan, you've been looking at a couple of matchups here. We think one of maybe the most exciting, and the exciting matchup that we're going to see, is Ryan McHugh and Peter Hart. We think they're going to go together well, because Peter Hart, you wrote about him on sportsshow.ie, like, he's just the ultimate sneaky player. He just pops up in you. I think you compared him to Thomas Muller, that he exposes space and finds himself in acres of space all the time.
I mean, I don't normally like making those different sport comparisons, but, like, it was similar to Thomas Muller in that he didn't really know how he was doing it, but he kept doing it. And sometimes he didn't even know what it was, but he was still doing it, and he was doing it well. The goal he scored against Cavan, like, he didn't even see where he was, didn't know where he came from, and then all of a sudden, bang, off the shoulder.
He's there.
And it's some finish as well, but he's so good. I'm actually starting to think, is he the best player in Ireland at the moment? Like, I thought it was Conor McManus, but obviously his season's ended badly, and, you know, Monaghan are out, but this guy is just, and everyone knows about him. Like, everyone was in the game thinking, we need to target Peter Hart. I read a piece Kevin Cassidy saying Donegal always targeted Peter Hart, but it doesn't seem to work. Like, I don't know who he's supposed to be picking him up. Did he just lose him?
Yeah.
But maybe Ryan McHugh is the man to do that.
I think he's the perfect man for Hart, as in, he's going to have the fitness, he'll have the pace. And another thing, what he's going to do with Hart is that Hart will drop back, and usually gets a free run when he drops back, and then breaks, you know, cleverly, but he's not being picked up. Ryan McHugh's just going to follow him when he drops back, and suddenly Hart has to mark Ryan McHugh. Ryan McHugh spent, I'd say, 70% of the game against Monaghan in the forwards.
Yeah, he did.
He was marking a McInnesby, who followed him, and my heart went out to him, you know, because he was actually playing wing back rather than centre half forward.
Yeah, the thing with Peter Hart is he's very good at timing it. You know, he could be hanging back, as you said, looks like he's disinterested, not keeping up with the play, and then all of a sudden it just takes one break. You know, maybe the opposition player just takes an eye off for a second. He would see that as an opportunity to go, and he just, you know, powers through, and he's that pace and power to get through any tackles or any defence. And there's her own lads obviously are aware of him coming off the shoulder as well.
I mean, it's like he sees everything in slow motion. I mean, like, he sees these tackles coming in from four men sometimes, and he just seems to be able to weave his way around them. And I wrote that piece and said I think he could solo a ball across a tightrope. I mean, he just seemed to find these little spaces.
Beautiful.
And he just worms away. it's gorgeous. Like, I don't mean to quote myself, but I thought that was apt. But the interesting thing is here, this is going to be sort of Mickey Hart v. Rory Gallagher, because I don't think Mickey Hart will want Peter Hart picking up Ryan McHugh, and he will probably put an all-turn man on Ryan McHugh. And if Ryan McHugh wants to pick up Peter Hart, that's fine, but it means he won't be able to attack, because if he does attack, then all of a sudden Hart's free, because he might not track him.
Yeah. I think they are suited, but then maybe there is that point that you put such a weapon on the other team's weapon. Like, J.J. Delaney was on the hurling show, and he says you always attack the opposition's strength. When that falls, You know what I mean? You're on a winner.
Hammer the hammer.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it's Tomás O'Shea in his book. He was saying he always got to pick up the handy half forward, you know, because he was confident or his manager wanted him to go forward and do as much damage as possible going forward and not to be worried about tracking and staying in his own half. But it'll be interesting to see if the two guys play against each other, because, you know, going up to mark a guy, he may be designated to mark someone else, and then it can be a really weird situation.
Lark Horvath, Tommy Welsh situation.
Exactly. It's like, no, I'm marking him, leave me alone, or yeah, you have to mark him type of thing. And you know,
well, defenders dictate who marks who.
Yeah.
Forwards can't say I'm marking whoever. Yeah, that's usually the way it works, or else you just get that weird somebody has to just concede and go, okay, this is getting a bit messy here now.
Let's get on with it.
I'm gonna have to walk away. But just going back to the Jim McGuinness thing, just to finish off, is like, he obviously detailed how that system worked for him. Now, there is differences between Tyrone and Donegal systems, a lot of them, but the one thing Tyrone don't have is that kind of, you know, they have Sean Cavanagh who comes out the field a bit, but the two lads that they leave in, McCallisky and Ronan O'Neill, they can't win their own ball, you know what I mean? You don't have the option of relieving diagonal ball to these fellas unless it's perfect.
That go-to ball.
So Tyrone are kind of pigeonholed in that they have to run a lot, and Ronan O'Neill loops around and McCallisky loops around. You know, and that's what that's kind of the way
and
they
And McCurry is similar enough as well when he comes on.
He's not on,
you know,
the team, by the way, Conan.
Yeah, he was supposed to start the last game, but they brought in Justin McMahon instead, like for like. where would you put him under the team, though?
I think it's either him or Ronan O'Neill. It's one or the other, like, you know.
Yeah, O'Neill and McCallisky, it works so well. I think you can only have two of them.
I think McCurry's better than O'Neill, though, is he?
I think he's very hot and cool. He reminds me of this amazing club player, and you're still waiting for him to come good. I don't know.
I think it'll be
45 minutes of one, 25 minutes of the other, maybe, you know, for the rest of the summer type of thing, and depending on who's going well in the week leading up to it.
Tyrone are actually gassed when you talk about substitutions. You watch on Sunday, both their wing forwards will be brought off between the 45th and 55th minute. He just does it.
Guaranteed.
Because of the role they have to play. Mm. You're coming off. I don't care if you score 3 points. You have to come off because there's no way you have the legs to do, you know what I mean, what you're trying to do. But, lads, one thing about this game, it's going to be a war.
Yeah.
Like, I asked Mickey.
You need a few cameras at it.
Yeah,
you need a few sets of eyes.
Like, these two teams don't like each other. They don't. And there's a lot of sledging, regardless of whether they like to admit it. There's a lot of, there'll be wides kicked and there'll be patted on the head, a bit like you did with Taylor Caffrey back then, Katzer.
Did I?
Yeah, I'm not sure you did. But there was, you know, there'll be a lot of reminders. You know, it doesn't look great, but like these two teams maybe are, when it comes to sledging, they bring the worst out. I don't think one team's worse than the other. They just bring the worst out in each other.
Yeah, and it's strange that it's, you know, Donegal's sixth Ulster final in a row, and yet it's Tyrone's first Ulster final since 2010.
Yeah.
But there's so much at stake, because obviously winning an Ulster title for both teams would give them so much oxygen going into Croke Park and playing in an Ireland quarter final. Whereas if you lose, you know, potentially you could be end up playing Dublin, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later if you get over the last 12 game, you know, and that'll be very difficult psychologically to get up and play 3 big games in 4 weeks, and particularly against this Dublin team. So you could nearly say whoever wins on Sunday, you're looking at being involved at the end of August. Whoever loses, you know, they could be gone pretty quick.
They're in trouble. It's so important, I think, for Tyrone. Tyrone have to win this game. It's almost like Jim McGuinness's first year, 2011. He had to beat Tyrone that year because they've just been beaten by them so many times. It's turned full circle now, where Tyrone are the, you know, inferior team and have this maybe psychological barrier that they can't get over the line against Donegal. They're getting closer, but when the game's in a melting pot, Donegal are coming out the right side. And like, for the development of this team, you'd imagine they kind of have to win this one.
This is a scalp they need.
Yeah.
I mean, but I just don't know. This team, I mean, it's the thing I hate most about Tyrone as a Derryman. They don't seem to have a stigma about anyone. They seem to have this sort of inherited cockiness nearly, where they're going on the pitch and they don't care who you are. Like, and
that's against Derry.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. You're playing Derry.
Okay, unleash.
But they've got this sort of, it's nearly disrespect, and that's why I want to see them playing Dublin, because I don't think Dublin have played a team like this yet, where they're so nasty and they will do anything to one, and I mean anything. And like, that defence is so mean. They will say whatever they want, they will do whatever they want off the ball, and it's just as, I don't care who this team is in front of me, I'm going to absolutely annihilate
Dublin's last four league games against Tyrone has actually been one draw, Dublin have won two of them by a point each, and Tyrone have won by a point.
Right.
So it just shows how tight it is, you know. Yeah. But obviously, you know, championship will be different if they do end up playing.
Mickey Hart definitely didn't want to talk about that. He said we're as far away from Dublin as we are geographically, 100 miles away from them. So he's dampening down that 100%. Yeah. Right, everybody listening, I hope you all know we have a hurling show as well.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so
we're only the small little fish out there, so we are in there. We're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
It's hard to know where to start with this one. It's like whether Dublin can beat the spread. It's not even a question of whether Westmeath can beat them, but we might as well talk about how Westmeath can beat them, because, you know, Tom Cribben's been talking during the week, and like, I don't know, he's very optimistic, and he's saying the only way to beat Dublin is by scoring three goals, which I 100% agree with. You have to score goals against Dublin to beat them, but also not conceding goals. So he's talking about packing the defence, but, you know, attacking, counter-attacking at pace with more than two or three, with a lot of players. Like, Tom, why didn't you do that against Kildare? You know what I mean? This all sounds great in theory, but, like, I mean, how do Westmeath, Barry, you obviously played with Dublin, and you played in that game against Donegal in 2011. How does a team set up to beat this Dublin team? Or, like, for a team like Westmeath, is it just futile one way or another?
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult. I mean, maybe Tom was looking at that 2014 All-Ireland semi-final against Donegal.
Yeah.
Donegal got three goals that day, and Dublin, I think, got 17 points, so they did keep them scoreless from a goal perspective. But look, it's very difficult. I mean, you know, Westmeath relegated down to Division 4 this year. They're obviously not at that standard, really. You know, they're better than that. You know, their second Leinster final in a row. Presumably they've learned a few things from last year's final, but it's going to be very, very hard for them, unless, I don't know, they food poisoned the Dublin team or something for Sunday afternoon. You can't see them getting too close to Dublin at all. A few things that they could do, obviously pushing up on Stephen Cluxton's kickouts, making that a bit more difficult.
Could get the goals that way, maybe.
Could get the goals that way, you know, maybe an interception, or maybe, you know, a breaking ball from the midfielder that, you know, you have the opportunity and to break through. I don't think you can probably push up on Stephen's kickouts for the full 75 minutes, because you may leave yourself exposed to, you know, Paul Flynn or Dermot Connolly collecting a long kickout, and all of a sudden, you're a bit vulnerable at the back.
Yeah.
But
so you're saying, actually, you know, maybe have a call on the field and say this, maybe push up on three or four and make them almost power plays that we have to score. When we push up, lads, we're going really, you know, that's not a bad one.
Yeah, make Stephen think, you know what I mean? Because he knows pretty much what he's going to do when he's heading out with the ball. You know, it's like clockwork for him. And, you know, 99% of teams just allow him to chip it out to Johnny Cooper or whoever. So, you know, try and put Dublin on the back foot that way.
Yeah. What do you think, Conor?
I have a theory.
Come on.
Why has no one tried what Derry did in 2015 in the league?
But Donegal did in 2011, though.
Yeah, to an extent. But Derry, like, Donegal were a better team than Derry. Well, but Donegal won the Ulster.
I'll tell you why. Because both teams lost. Or did Derry draw that night?
Derry lost.
Derry lost. They both lost. And the game was a farce.
Well, Derry were winning by, what's the 62nd minute? They were still winning, and they were
winning.
There was inevitability about it, though, I thought.
Yeah,
you know?
But there's more inevitability about this Westmeath thing. Like, let's look at, like, we're talking about, you know, they're trying to copy what Donegal did, but Donegal were doing that for four seasons. Like, and then by the time they got to Croke Park, they were flying for it then. Like, and that was one of the best performances ever. But it was 4 years in the making. The Derry thing they did that night in Croke Park in March last year, was it? They ended up getting relegated that season, but they spent four sessions on it with Paddy Talley, who won All-Irelands with Tyrone coaching them. And it was just basically every man behind the ball, but it wasn't just that. When they had the ball, they had boys like Sean Leo McGoldrick, who weren't even trying to attack. They just held on to it.
Yeah.
Held on to it.
Nearly killing the clock type
of
thing.
There's there's that example when Mark Lynch had a free kick 45 metres out. No one was ahead of him. Everybody else was still back. It was a complete, like, we haven't seen it before, really. Maybe that time in 2011 with Donegal, but we haven't seen anything like that before. The ball that Mark Lynch kicked ended up dropping short, and like, but Derry were ready for Dublin again, and they didn't score from that attack.
Like, the thing about that is that, you know, you will frustrate Dublin, because if you've got 40 men inside the 45, like, their kicking game is gone. You know, 50, well, the goalkeeper, 15, what am I talking about? You know, Dublin's kicking game is gone. So like, they got caught rotten against Donegal in 2011. I remember Gerard Brennan consistently trying to give in long ball. Like, you were kind of shell-shocked.
Bernard was like 5-on-1 inside.
Shell-shocked at it. But they've had 5 years to work on this now, and I'm sure you worked on it a lot, and they don't kick the aimless balls anymore. They're patient, and in the last 15 minutes their superior physicality will wear teams down, because there's no one on Dublin's level of professionalism, physicality, you know what I mean, and size, that these teams that are doing these kind of things are working. Westmeath were only 8-4 down last year, because it is difficult, but when you start getting tired, you know, it's hard to stop
even
that
mentally as well. Because it doesn't take much to switch off. That Leinster final last year, they switched off for 3 or 4 minutes and Dublin got 2 goals, you know, and game then that was game over. But in 2011 we actually played into Donegal's hands, you know, because it was such a new experience for us playing against that, and that's obviously not the case anymore, you know. And
Were you saying to each other on the field? Were you communicating, going like, what the hell is going on?
Leading into the game, like, we would have had A versus B training matches, and the B team would have had 17 players.
Okay.
You know, so we, you know, and obviously the easy thing to say is, oh, you know, quick direct ball inside, you know, get the ball in before the players are able to retreat. But from the throw in, the two half forwards, you know, Bradley and Mark McHugh ran past me. didn't even look to see if Neil Gallagher won the throw up or anything like that. They just ran past me. So they were stationary in that hole in front of Bernard Brogan from like the 5th second of the match, and they didn't leave it.
No.
So that was complete. I was standing beside Carl Lacey and I was like, what's going on here? But we played into our hands. We got frustrated. You know, we started taking pot shots from the sideline and the end line. And like, Jim McGuinness would have told Donegal beforehand, this is Dublin we're going to do. So, you know, his halftime speech was easy because everything had unfolded exactly how he predicted. But
what was your halftime speech? What was your halftime like?
Well, yeah, it was a lot of head scratching. In fairness, Mickey Whelan and Pat, you know, they would have given us a few minutes ourselves to chat through it, change a few things around. Kevin McMenamin coming on was a big thing, you know, because he, and the big thing was patience, you know, and composure, because, you know, you did feel that possibly, you know, Donegal aren't going to be so defensive or have that aggression and tackle for the full 75 minutes, and you know the game could be won in the last 10 minutes, and that's what happened. I think we got the last 3 scores to win an 8-6, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I suppose when you do look at that, is having that concentration and having that discipline, and the fellas that are detailed to break, you know, they've got a really tough job. They're tackling like demons, and then they're having to break and come back. 70 minutes, you know, is a long time with that kind of grueling game plan.
Suppose the way I'm looking at it is Tom Cribbins saying they need to score 3 goals. I'm probably thinking, is it more likely that they can keep Dublin to 9 points rather than score 3 goals themselves? Like, I don't think they can score. Well, I don't think they can do Dublin to nine points either.
Meade conceded 21 points, wasn't it? But no goals. Dublin didn't really create too many goal chances the last day. You know, so you can do. I think that's achievable. Stopping Dublin scoring goals is achievable. You know, but like, there's 7 or 8 other steps then along that,
like,
as well. You know,
have they dealt with it yet? Like, you know, they won the All-Ireland last year, but they didn't really face it. Like, the last time they faced it was 2014 against a good team. You know, like, fair enough. If Westmeath do it, they might keep a score down. I think it will be their best chance of maybe doing something, but they'll still lose.
Yeah, didn't Donegal do it to them in the league this year and got blown away, you know?
The first game, not the league semi-final. The round four game or something like that, yeah.
That the, you know, Dublin, like I said, have 5 years of practice. Dublin aren't as silly as they used to be, you know? It's just through trial and error, you know? They're actually being more patient now, and even the crowd that, okay, we're only 2 points up, but the last 15 minutes, kind of everyone's comfortable in the fact that when we get them to this stage, we'll bring the 5 off the bench and we'll get through them then.
Yeah, and if guys on the pitch are doing the wrong thing with it, you know, Jim Gavin's just going to take them off.
He's ruthless enough,
and it would have been picked up over the last 2 or 3 years playing against this system. If you're doing the wrong thing, you know, soloing up the pitch instead of getting the ball up quick or things like that, you're going to be pulled at half time, you know, straight away.
The one thing Westmeath do have in their armoury is Heslin and Kieran Martin up front. And it's always like the Jim McGuinness model. You need these players that can win that extra, kind of their own ball when two men are on them and, you know, have the strength.
Even Heslin, Paul Sherry as well. You know, he's this big, strong guy. You could put him at centre forward if you wanted to.
He'll play there. So if they're bringing a lot of men back, by the time they get up to the middle third, they have that diagonal ball option because Martin's a bull. You know what I mean? He's really strong. He can push by two, whether he can push by two of Dublin's kind of big physical players. But Heslin's a scorer. So they have a great balance in there. You know,
and maybe James Dolan coming from deep, you know, sort of like Ryan McHugh a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And if you said to James Dolan, look, you're not really defending, you're going to drop back, you know, and get in block areas all right, but you don't have to waste energy tackling. Your role is actually just to go forward at every opportunity and support these guys. You know, they might get a small bit of joy out of that.
That's the thing. And then there's the whole Keane O'Sullivan factor. You play defensive, yeah. Keane O'Sullivan's going to be on Martin and on Heslin, and whoever that ball goes to, he'll be doubling up, or he, you know what I mean, he'll be orchestrating who's going to double up. He's almost like the player manager on the field. So you've got that issue being defensively against Dublin now, whereas he didn't years ago, the Keane O'Sullivan factor.
I mean, I think Westmeath would be kidding themselves though. They went down thinking, oh, we've got Heslin and Martin, you know, two good players. I mean, it has to be something more drastic than that. They can't think that these guys could win them a game, because they won't. So it needs to be something extreme.
Yeah, okay, bring those two. See, you don't want to bring Heslin and Martin back into your own 45.
No, I think they have to stay inside their 45 for
keep
the whole Heslin game.
Heslin on score freeze.
Yeah. You have to understand, we will never convince Conan of anything outside of put the 15 inside the 45.
Well, I'm just like, I don't like that system at all, but I'm just saying, we know Westmeath are going to lose, so it has to be something that we haven't seen before. They won. It has to be something.
So, it's Westmeath's perspective, you know, the novel factor of playing Dublin and then a Leinster final is not there this year. And last year, they had the whole euphoria of beating Meath, first time ever in championship, you know, in the manner that they did it. So, you know, they'd be a bit more low key going into it, and it'll, you know, they'll be more comfortable with playing in a Leinster final against Dublin. Maybe that could help a small bit as well.
Yeah, it is very interesting that you say it has to be something we haven't seen before. Is Tom Cribben capable of doing that? Probably not, because when he's referencing, well, we have to do what Tyrone do, which is straight back into the copycat. They break with four or five different players is in. Tom, think about maybe what you might want your team to do. You
maybe
know,
he like, is. He's just not saying it to the media.
Maybe he's being clever enough about that you wouldn't know. All right, up next, we'll try to make you some money with our qualifier accumulators. All right, lads. Who's going to go first? Conan, you're working away on yours for about 3 hours there this morning, so I'm going to let you get up there first.
I figured out how to make us some money here.
There's seven games between qualifiers and provincial finals. We're going to be ambitious and go for the seven. Like, cause forget about being conservative. There's too many conservative managers around the country. We're just going to go for it. We have 10 or each, and we're going to help you make some money on a 7-game accumulator.
Well, my seven teams have gotten me over 61-1 odds, but it's all coming from one game, and it's a draw between Derry and Cavan. 15-2 for a draw.
Yeah, draws are very underused in Gaelic games.
We make serious money, and I'm not condoning gambling or anything, but we make serious money in Derry just on the club championship. Back a draw every single round, and like you'll always make money from it, like a lot of money too.
Yeah.
But so I'm going to go for a draw between Derry and Cavan.
That's not the worst call in the world.
No, like the thing is, I thought Derry might win, and then I thought Cavan might win. So,
the next option is a draw.
That's my thought process.
Absolutely brilliant. You don't need any more explanation than that.
Sligo Clare. I mean, I thought Clare might win, so I went for that.
The only thing, I actually went for Sligo on that because Markovic Park is a horrible place to go and play. Like for some reason, Sligo, I know home advantage is obviously an advantage, but Sligo have get really good results, especially in the league in Markovic Park. You know, they are good there.
In qualifiers down through the years, only 51% of home teams have won.
Is that all?
That's all, yeah.
Because I'd like to see the stats on league football, because a lot of home wins in league football.
Yeah, every weekend you're probably going with 75% home wins.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go with Clare on that one. I think they're just having such a good run. You know, getting promotion, having a good win the last day, particularly against Laois. And I just think Clare will sneak that one. But it will be tight enough, similar to the Cavan Derry game and the Longford Cork game. I think the one clear cut one is obviously the Mayo Kildare game.
The one clear cut
win.
And Dublin Westmeath, obviously. Longford Cork. Look, okay, well, I'll just let you know that I'm making you 1,300 for your tenner here, but that's because I've thrown Longford into the mix. I don't think it's that crazy a call. Pierce Park is horrible. There's a big hill on the field. Longford have their tails up. Cork have their tails down. Cork are not going well. Now, I know they've Alan O'Connor back in midfield. And they have two. Another thing as well here, lads, they have the two hurlers back on the team. They have Aidan Walsh and Alan Cadogan back on. That's not right. Those two fellas, especially Aidan Walsh, I'm not so sure about Cadogan because he's usually a hurler. Aidan Walsh had a choice at the start of the year. He chose a different squad. Now he hasn't been there all year, and he's going to come. He probably won't start, but he's going to come on. I don't know if you're on a squad. Are you happy? Are you still a little bit bitter that he went with the hurlers when we've always known him as a footballer, and now he's going to come in and come on before you. There'd be lads sitting on that bench going, you know, saying this is bullshit.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I definitely would have thought a couple of years ago that Aidan should stick with the footballers, you know, because I thought he had the potential to be one of the best players in the country, or he had shown that for a few years, you know, even though the hurlers got to the Ireland final a couple of years ago against Clare and stuff. But I suppose when the news would have broke that the two of them were coming into the panel, if you're in the sub sort of 16 to 30 bracket, you're probably thinking, what's going on here? Because they're going to come on at the weekend, you know.
And you can take it from me, there's a lot of bitching goes on the subs bench. Everyone's playing their own game, you know what I mean, and everybody's watching the game.
They're putting out a front, but behind it all,
absolutely. Although there is the odd fella on a squad that's maybe 24-25 who's just basically a fan. He's just happy to be there. He knows he's not getting on. Yeah. And they're the ones really pissed me off. I'm watching the half forward line, the full forward line, hoping someone makes a mistake. And you've this fella beside me cheering every score. Like, I'm like, okay, it wasn't ideal that forward getting that score for me. Get away from me. But like, that kind of thing does go on benches, you know, this kind of, you know, underlying bitchiness because they're not on the team. It's only natural. It's on every team I've ever been on. And I've been right in the middle of it as well. But like, Aidan Walsh coming on is just going to set that fire lighting, you know, brightly.
I wonder, you know, does the core of the team, like, are they happier with these players coming in to give them a better chance of winning? I know, just
that's the other way of looking at it.
From a Derry example, like Owen Bradley was in the squad like the last 2 years before this season, and he was playing soccer with Glenavon. But obviously, you ask the players, like, do you have a better chance of winning on a Sunday with Owen Bradley? And if he misses a few training sessions, does anyone care? No one really wants to rock the boat. Maybe they do bitch about it, but they don't speak up. And then
depends how close you are to the player as well. You know, if you're one of the Cork footballers and you're friendly with Aidan Walsh, you'd welcome him back. No problem at all. You know, because you know he's going to add something to it. But possibly not all 30 players are going to feel the same way.
No, definitely not. What Mayo Kildare obviously went for Mayo here. Mayo 1-10. There's no value in them. No. But we'll just throw them in. We all went for Mayo here, lads. So they're
handicap 7. I think
Aidan Shea's going to score a goal as well.
Yeah, the next one is really interesting. It's obviously Galway or Evens. Roscommon are 11-10. Just slight outsiders. I went for Galway here just purely based on the fact that they were the better team last week. They seem to be
should have seen it out.
Yeah, they should have seen it out. There seem to be a little bit more comfortable in their system than Roscommon, who, you know, were a little bit all over the place, I thought, last week. A lot of players didn't perform. So for those reasons,
I think Galway will win. Yeah, I just think they have the better forwards. If you take the four forwards of Sice, Walsh, Cummins and Comer, those four players I think are better than Roscommon's top four forwards. And I think they could, you know, do the majority of the damage for them on Sunday.
Yeah, so who did you go for here, Conan?
I went Roscommon, mostly because we talked about it on Monday and I said Roscommon would win. But I just think they didn't play anything at the weekend. Like, they didn't do anything anywhere near what they're sort of capable of. I just think if they can produce what they did in the league, I know it's going to be tough, and we had this discussion on Monday, but I don't know, I just think they'll have a bit more confidence coming into the game, and Galway might think, Jesus, did we miss the boat there? Like, what are we going to
do? They haven't played well in a while, though. Yeah. You know, they haven't played well probably since the end of March.
They're off boil, yeah. The second half against Sligo, when they had the win, they played well, but that was about it. Dublin Westmeath, we're going to move on from there. That's probably whether it's going. We didn't even include spreads here. Dublin are 1 16. to 100. So we're adding about 5 pence onto our accumulator to get past that one. Next one's really interesting. I cannot understand this. Donegal are 2 to 1. To beat Tyrone. What? Bookies usually get it right. So, you know, I'm not going to start arguing too much. But Donegal, for the 6th Ulster final in a row, the best team in Ulster consistently. Very, very impressive against Monaghan, who are the 2nd best team in Ulster. And they're 2-1 outsiders to beat Tyrone.
Yeah. I think it's probably 50-50 nearly going into
50-50,
the game, you know.
Isn't it, though?
It really is. When you sit down and analyse the teams, the managers, the form they're in, and obviously the pedigree that Donegal have shown over the last 6 years. I know they've a couple of poor results towards the latter end of the championship last year and stuff, but I think, it's really 50-50, so, you know, a bit of value on that one.
Yeah, who did you two go for? I went for Donegal there, basically, for the reasons I just outlined.
Yeah, I mean, I went for Tyrone. If I was a bookmaker, I'd be really stingy. I would make Donegal evens, but I would still have Tyrone odds on, just so you can't get any money out of this, because it nearly is 50.
Pretty sure you can't do that.
No one will place a bet either.
I don't want to place a bet in this game, but I just think Tyrone will edge it.
I'm going to go with Tyrone as well, just by a point or two, yeah.
Okay, right. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to put our three accumulators up on sportsjoe.ie so you can have a look at them later on, because maybe we've been a bit jumbled up there, and see how you get on. I think mine comes to 1,300. What does Barry's come to, Conan? You did the calculation.
104 euros.
104, very conservative here. He went for all the favourites, and you are at?
623.
623, but you threw a draw in there between Cavan and Derry. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks to Conan, Mikey and Evan for putting the show together. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe_GAA. And make sure you subscribe to our GAA podcast on iTunes. We're up there now. Just search for the GAA Hour. Subscribe, listen and rate us. All right, that's it. See you next Monday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.